comprehensive translation of this name, Krishna, is what we've written here. This is including the various concepts given up the top there for each syllable. So, in this way, we understand Krishna to be... Krishna is the supreme name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it, in the most complete way, encompasses the, like, broadest possible understanding of what the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. That he is he who is full of transcendental bliss, and whose handsome form and transcendental qualities attract all living entities. In other words, whatever you may be attracted to, Krishna has it transcendentally. Yeah, Krishna has it transcendentally. Whatever it may be. If you like beauty, Krishna has it all transcendentally. If you happen to be one of these odd people who likes ugliness, Krishna has it all. Yeah. In a transcendental form. Well, yeah, in a complete form. Krishna, for example, in Bhagavad Gita says, Mrityu sarva harascham. I'm all devouring death. And death is about the ugliest thing, most horrible thing. So, within Krishna, we have all beauty, all ugliness. We have the greatness. If you're attracted to something very big, then Krishna's the biggest. But then, as Lord Brahma will see later on in Brahma Samhita, as Lord Brahma says, Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. Krishna, along with being the biggest, he's so small, he is within the atom. Param Anu. He is within the atom. Atom, we understand, at least in the Vedic, from the Vedic perspective, atom means the smallest particle of matter. When you divide matter and you get to a point, you cannot divide it any further. So that's the smallest particle of matter. But Krishna's within it. So he's even smaller than the smallest. But he's also the greatest. He's everything. So all these things are within Krishna. Or all these concepts of the Absolute Truth are included within the concept of the Absolute Truth as Krishna, the all-attractive person. And he who, by being all attractive in all these different ways, eventually brings people to the point of transcendental pleasure. People become attracted, they become devotees. Now, we at this moment, we are experiencing a very typical Vrindavan phenomenon, the power blackout. And particularly in this these warmer days, the temperature, you may have already noticed, the temperature has risen a bit, and it will continue to. And I see we've still got some windows closed at the back. Maybe we should open the windows before we start reaching meltdown point. Well, I think it's coming already. Just, I have heard, there's one story from when Srila Prabhupada first started in New York, in 26 Second Avenue. And some alcoholics came in a very cheerful type of mood, right into the middle of the program. You can just imagine some alcoholics just walking in here, waving bottles of wine, and encouraging everyone in a friendly type of way. Not like in an aggressive way, but just in sort of, you know, a rather goofy and friendly type of way. That, come on! Join us, this is great. And then they went, then they walked out, and Srila Prabhupada laughed. And some of the devotees, one of the devotees who was there told me that, you know, they were just expecting Prabhupada to say something, you know, kind of heavy or you know, cutting about Maya and the conditioned souls and their bewilderment and all that. But Prabhupada didn't. Prabhupada said that if these men, when they drink their wine, if every time they just think, oh, the taste of this wine is Krishna, and then they drink it. Then Prabhupada said, if they just carry on doing like that, they'll become devotees. They'll become Krishna conscious. Of course, we don't recommend that. You do that exactly, but the principle is there. Krishna is all attractive. Whatever you may be attracted to, it could be anything, but it transcendentally exists within Krishna. And when you connect it with Krishna, with the absolute truth, in that form of Krishna, then you can become situated in transcendental pleasure. You can become a devotee. So therefore, this name Krishna implies his love-attracting designation, even through the medium of wine or death, you know, these unpleasant things. He can attract your love. And in this way, it expresses by his eternal nomenclature, which I think basically we can take to mean name. It actually generally means like a category of names. Yeah. Which is the acme of entity. It's expressing the topmost nature, aspect, or the most complete aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His beautiful, heavenly, blue-tinged body, glowing with the intensity of ever-existing knowledge, has a flute in both his hands. That's fairly straightforward, I think. As his inconceivable spiritual energy is all extending, so Krishna, by his spiritual energy, is all pervading. He, in other words, he is the greatest, unlimited. But still he maintains his all charming, medium size, human size. By his qualifying spiritual instrumentals. Now that's a little trickier. I mean his qualifying spiritual instrumentals. If you look down a few lines in this paragraph, you'll see that instrumentals are explained a little further down as being senses. So let us apply that translation or understanding to the word in this particular sentence. So his qualifying spiritual instrumentals, the way I understand this and with the help of my dictionary, is that this means even though he's totally unlimited, vast, billions of miles, zillions of miles across, much more than that, unlimited, but it's all present in his body. When he appears as Krishna, like he is standing on the altar in so many forms, so each one of those forms, charming, medium size, human size, each one of them contains everything. Isn't that interesting? Each one of them contains everything. You know, this whole planet, for example, and this whole universe we're in, is within each one of those forms on the altar. This we see particularly in the Damodar Leela, how Mother Yashoda was trying to tie up Krishna, but she couldn't until he allowed her to, even though she got, in the end, she got, from what we understand, several kilometers of rope, a lot of rope, couldn't get around Krishna once. And finally, she just got so concerned about what am I going to do about this boy? My boy, I've got to train him. It's that maternal concern. So Krishna then allowed the rope to be long enough, or really he couldn't stop it because he was overpowered by her love, actually. So then the rope was enough. So why? You know, why is it that several kilometers of rope was not enough? The reason is that that little, apparently little or charming medium-sized form of Krishna is, it is not that the unlimited Krishna has specially manifested a little form for us so we can now relate with him. No, not that. But that charming little form contains the everything. All the everything is subservient to that charming little form. So in this way, his qualifying spiritual instrumentals means that he has that skill. He has that skill and ability that with his senses, meaning with his mind and his energies and his abilities, it's all included in that little form of Krishna, the charming medium-sized form. The concentrated, all-time presence, uncovered knowledge, and inebriating felicity have their beauty in him. In other words, the totality of eternity, knowledge, and bliss is concentrated within Krishna, just like Brahma Samhita's concentrated nectar in the form of knowledge, the concentrated message of Srimad Bhagavatam, you could say. So all of eternity, knowledge, and bliss is concentrated in that medium-sized form of Krishna. It's interesting, he uses the word inebriating. Inebriating, of course, normally implies something to do with intoxication. And the fact is, you know, he's so clever how he uses his language. But when the devotees become so advanced, like in Vrindavan, and he's particularly concerned with Krishna in Vrindavan, then it's as if they become intoxicated. Yoga Maya acts, and they get into illusion. And so they think, oh, this Krishna, he is my son, he is my friend. And even Krishna becomes intoxicated, so to speak, by Yoga Maya. So like when Lord Brahma was offering his prayers to Lord Krishna after the Brahma Vimohana Leela, Lord Brahma, this is in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, he's glorifying Krishna so nicely as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But according to our acharyas, Krishna is standing there wondering to himself, is he talking about me? And Krishna's thinking, I don't think so. I'm just a cowherd boy. I wonder when he's going to finish so I can get back to my important business of playing. Krishna was thinking like that. So in this way, there's this, you could say, inebriating aspect to the ecstasy of love, particularly in Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. The mundane manifestive portion of his own self is known as Paramatma Ishvara or Vishnu. This is the super soul. Hence it is evident that Krishna is sole supreme Godhead. His unrivaled or unique spiritual body of super excellent charm is eternally unveiled. So that beautiful body, that incomparable medium, charming medium-sized body of Krishna is eternally unveiled or revealed to the devotees with innumerable spiritual instrumentals. See, what he's doing in some of these sentences, he's using what is called juxtaposition. He is putting two, like, apparently contradictory concepts side by side. Unlimited Krishna in the charming medium size. So here also, his unique, beautiful, medium-sized body, so charming, is eternally revealed, but with innumerable senses, innumerable abilities, unlimited again, and unreckonable attributes. His unlimited qualities, which you cannot understand. And then this is a rather intriguing statement. Keeping their signifying location properly, adjusting at the same time by his inconceivable conciliative powers. Now, I really studied my dictionary to try and get a clearer idea on this. Keeping their signifying location properly. Now, what do we make of that? Signifying location. While at the same time adjusting by his inconceivable conciliative powers. So the signifying locations is like in opposition to the conciliation. You follow what I mean? So what does the signifying mean? Now, I had to really study, but I think I got an interesting idea. Have any of you ever heard of a game called signifying? Have you heard of a game called signifying? It is like an archaic or old-fashioned, traditional English game in which people have to invent sentences to oppose each other. Someone makes a statement, someone else has to oppose it with another statement. And they're meant to use, you know, very clever language to do that. So it's a game of like verbal opposition. It's, you know, I mean, it's some connected with the practice of something like sophistry, if you're familiar with that. The science of argument. Yeah. It's really like connected with the science of argument. And the idea is someone's meant to make a statement and you're meant to oppose that, to contradict that. And this is a game, which I'm sure none of us have ever heard of before or played before. So it appeared to me that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta may well have chosen this word signifying location properly, in the sense that just like in the game signifying, you try to make like a comprehensive statement and then someone tries to oppose that with another comprehensive and complete statement, and in this way you kind of compete with each other. That this may be the implication here, that even though it's within his little body, apparently little body, but his innumerable capacities, his innumerable abilities, his innumerable qualities are allowed to stand, even though they may, in terms of being within that limited body, you may think that how could they stand? How could they all exist together in that very limited form of little Krishna? But somehow they do. Somehow they do. How? Because they're being adjusted by his inconceivable conciliative powers. Yes. All these things which couldn't fit into Krishna if they're allowed to stand completely as they are. But they can. By his inconceivable conciliative powers. Does that sound reasonable?
Sorry?
Two parties are opposed to each other to the same point, to the point of agreement. So that's conciliation. And anyway, I just thought this this game called signifying, you know, I just thought it was a very interesting concept in this context. Okay. So this beautiful spiritual figure is identical with Krishna, and the spiritual entity of Krishna is identical with his own body. So Krishna, the person, and his body are the same. It's not that Krishna is Krishna and Krishna has his body like we have our bodies. Two separate things. But Krishna, the person, and his body are one. Yes, by his inconceivable conciliative powers, he can eat with his eyes and, you know, see with his toes. And see, it's not just his senses. That's part of it. It's also his unreckonable attributes. And he has innumerable capabilities, instrumentals. He has innumerable senses. So all these things are maintaining their own positions, even though you would expect them not to be able to all sort of be packed in there to that little form of Krishna. But they are, by his inconceivable conciliative powers. The very intensely blended entity of eternal presence of felicitous cognition is the charming targeted holding or transcendental icon. So this very intensely blended entity, in other words, the body of Krishna, in which all these things are blended by his conciliative powers, that is the charming, that is the goal or worshipable deity. Yes, Krishna is the goal or worshipable deity. Then he talks about Brahman. It follows that the conception of the impersonal, unlimited Brahman, which is indolent, indolent basically means lazy. There's also, according to the dictionary, one understanding of the word indolent is like you may have something which is detrimental, like an ulcer. The example is given of an ulcer. But if it is not active, it's considered indolent. So it's like it's benign. They would call such a thing benign. It's something detrimental, but it's not active. So this Brahman, he's basically speaking in kind of negative terms about the Brahma Jyoti. It's merely a penumbra. Penumbra refers to the the glow, the partial or imperfect shadow outside the complete shadow of an opaque body as a planet, like the apparent effulgence of a planet, like of the moon. There's a type of, almost like a halo, there's a little type of glow around it. So the Brahma Jyoti is the glow of eternity, blissfulness, and knowledge coming from this form of Krishna. Krishna in his original face, in his original form, is the primordial background of that Brahman, the original source from which the Brahma Jyoti is coming. Then he makes very interesting, and it's actually very, very important point, that Krishna, as truly visioned in his variegated pastimes, such as the owner of transcendental cows, the chief of the cowherds, the consort of the milkmaids, the ruler of the terrestrial abode Gokula, and object of worship, by the transcendental residence of Goloka, he's known as Govinda. Now, this is very important, because if we just look back at the translation, we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has translated this verse that Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. In other words, this book is not exactly about Krishna. It is, of course, but it's particularly about Krishna, who is Govinda. Yeah, that's what this book is about. And that is the particular form of Krishna that Lord Brahma is concerned with. And therefore we find, when we get to the main verses or most popular verses, you don't see him saying, Krishnam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. It's Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lord Brahma is particularly interested in this form of Krishna. This is a particularly wonderful form of Krishna for Lord Brahma. So that's a very important point. And in Jiva Goswami's commentary, he goes to some lengths to discuss this point. He refers to how in the Govardhan Leela, how at the end of the Govardhan Leela, Lord Indra comes and the Surabhi cow comes, and actually all the demigods come, and so many people come. And Indra offers his prayers, and then they have the Abhishek for Krishna, and the Surabhi is also bathing Krishna. So it's described there how the Surabhi cow speaks on behalf of the cows of Vrindavan and says that we want you as our Indra. And so then they have the Abhishek, and at the end, Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Lord Indra crowns Krishna as the Indra in Vrindavan. And in that and he gives Krishna the name Govinda. This name Govinda is like the Inda is synonymous with the Indra. Govinda means the Lord of the cows. And because go refers also to the senses, so Krishna as Govinda is the Lord of the senses of all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. In other words, Krishna as Govinda is the presiding deity of all the people and all the living entities in Vrindavan. So it was at that time Krishna was given the name Govinda by Lord Indra, actually, to indicate that he is the Lord of the cows and of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So it is that particular form of Krishna that Lord Brahma is interested in. Krishna as Govinda, this term Govinda or the concept of Krishna as Govinda, is not exactly as complete as referring to Krishna as Krishna. Krishna as Govinda is included within Krishna as Krishna. But still that particular feature of Krishna as the Lord of Vrindavan and the inhabitants, the devotees of Vrindavan, that particular sweet feature of Krishna, Lord Brahma is interested in. Yeah. You follow the idea? You know, when we refer to Krishna as Krishna, that includes him being Narayan. It includes him being Vishnu. It includes him being the taste of water or the taste of wine even. All these things are included when we refer to God as Krishna. But when we refer to him as Govinda, we are referring to him in this capacity, as the Lord and master of everyone in Vrindavan. So, Lord Brahma is specifically attracted to that form of Krishna. And therefore, he's making this statement in this very first verse.